Hello, everyone, and welcome back to TaylorMade, the show where you ask the questions and you get your answers tailor-made by Hamline University head football coach Chip Taylor. In this week's episode, the coach talks to us about the disappointing start to this season and what he's expecting against Gustavus Adolphus this week. The coach shares his disappointment in his beloved Eagles losing this last weekend. And what's the perfect hashtag to describe Coach Taylor? Let's find out on TaylorMade.
Let's welcome back Coach Taylor. Coach, do you have any team updates for us?
You know what, team updates, I don't want to say surprisingly, but guys are healthy. The spirits are good around. It's an interesting year, man. So I'm just excited to see how we attack meetings and practice today, and just trying to keep it one day at a time and get ready for a really, really good Gustavus ball club coming up here. So,
well, let's start with last week's game. You get off to a fast start, but the Knights kind of take command of this game in the second, third quarter. Tell me what you thought about your team's performance.
Yeah, you know what? It was one heck of a first half. You know, it was the first time that we came out and were clicking on all cylinders, in all three phases, actually. You know, we have not done that yet. The challenge is being able to put a whole game together, man. And when you're playing with so many young people out on the football field, again, not to make excuses for those guys, because at the end of the day, if you're out there, we expect for you to get the jobs done. But, you know, we have a big percentage of our team that were in high school last year, you know, so they don't really, these are young people, they don't know how to control their emotions, and, you know, sometimes they're getting too high and can't get too low, and, you know, I mean, it's, you know, so we ran into that, you know, at the end of the first half and gave up some points, and, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we just didn't get it done, but it kind of felt, you know, it proves the point that, you know, I've been seeing good things in practice. I know we can play, but we got to be able to put a whole game together. We have not done that yet. Again, like I said, man, right, that's my job, is to get these guys ready to roll and be able to lock in and play a whole game, man. So I was excited for a little bit, but then obviously, you know, the game did not end up the way we wanted it to.
I know you had some concerns heading into the game about the Carlton quarterback, and they seem to be well-founded.
Yeah, you know, again, man, film doesn't lie. You know, they like I tell our guys all the time, they have good players and coaches on the other sideline too. So I knew going into the game that quarterback was solid, and the thing was, you know, he wasn't really hitting us down the field. He was efficient. We talked about him knowing where to go with the football, but the thing that he did was a couple third downs. He got the ball to one of their best players, and you know, the kid just made a play. You know, he actually did it three times on a little flip screen. And so, I mean, it was just a bad event for our corner out there. Couldn't get off a block, and he just couldn't get that thing tackled. So that's what really hurt us. And so it wasn't that he was really killing us down the field. It was a short passes that we just couldn't get tackled, and the kid ended up making some long runs. So, and that receiver was really good. The coach's son was a really good football player down there.
So, whose performance really kind of stood out for you?
You know what? Noah Jacobson, he did a good job for us. He's a defensive end, for senior defensive end from Monticello. Did a really good job as far as just playing with a lot of heart and passion out there. I mean, he had a fake punt. I mean, he had a fumble recovery. I mean, he really let it loose. Xander Payne, I thought, he's a freshman from Arizona, did a great job in some short yardage, run packages, and actually ended up getting his first collegiate touchdown, which I thought was pretty cool. Don't want to take that for granted, you know. And then, you know, Justice Briggs, when we were able to keep him up, you know, he was, you know, consistent. But again, he's playing with really three or four offensive linemen who don't have any college experience right now. So that's where we're at.
You welcome the Gustavus Adolphus to Class Field this weekend. What do you see as keys to this game?
Oh, well, again, you know, just talking about this league, I mean, everybody has good players, man. If you have a quarterback, you got a chance. They've had a quarterback. Every year I've been here, this place, you know, Gustavus has had a quarterback. And Mitch Hendrick from a couple of years ago was super highly efficient. And then Veldman is doing a really great job as far as just commanding the offense. I mean, he's a North Dakota State transfer. I mean, so he has that pedigree. You know, I think he probably was actually in training camp with Carson Wentz, right? I mean, can you imagine that, right? Being in a meeting room with Carson Wentz and that guy's playing for the Eagles now. So, I mean, he's been around that kind of pedigree. And Gustavus has always been quarterback-driven, always. You know, in the last 6 years I've been here, they've been a really quarterback machine. So, I mean, he's getting coached up very well. The guy that really, really, really is intriguing down there is Brayton Finch, man, number 44. This kid was a tight end last year, and when you watch him on film, they're lining him up at running back. He lines up at tight end. He punts, and he kicks off for those guys. I mean, this kid is very dynamic. And, you know, we talked about it. We're trying to – you can't stop him, but, you know, you have to try to slow him down. I mean, and that's going to be a tough deal, again, with a quarterback that can give him the ball. So it's going to be a great, great challenge for our guys, man. So, I mean, they're really, very, very well. I mean, they're big up front on defense. They got two 295-pound, almost 300-pound defensive guys, defensive inside people, and they're running around on defense. So it'll be a great challenge for our guys. Our guys are excited and ready to roll.
You mentioned about Michael Veldman. They always have had, you know, a top quarterback down there at Gustavus. What do you think has really made him so special?
You know what? I think, again, it all goes back to, I think, the way he's coached and the pieces they put around him, man. I mean, he knows when you watch him play, he knows exactly where to go with the football. You know, and they have an older offensive line. That helps. You know, so, I mean, there's some things down there in place that is going to, you know, force him to have some success. So.
Well, we had the fan questions this week. We start with Rick, who says, what do you think is making it difficult to establish a running game this year?
Again, just kind of touching on it as far as, you know, this offensive line. You know, offensive line is a big deal. And like I said, we're young, you know, so we're young with the offensive line. You know, something that, you know, we're going to definitely look at as, you know, we evolve with the recruiting piece that is, you know, tight ends and fullbacks. I mean, that's always a key piece right now. And, you know, we're a little bit more skill-driven on our team right now. So that's something that we got to address in recruiting. Get those tight ends and fullbacks, you know, on the roster so you can create another gap and run the football. So
we have a couple of questions from Stu. The first one says, Coach, I don't want this to sound critical, so please accept my apology if it sounds that way. 2 years ago, the Pipers seemed like they were on the rise, but the last 2 years, it seems like the team is regressing. What is behind that, do you think?
Stu, that's a fair question. I don't think there's nothing you need to apologize for. That's a fair question. And, you know, I have to be very careful how to answer because, you know, one thing we talk about around here is no excuses, right? You've got to figure it out and get it done. Well, if you want to really dive into it, you know, when I took over, you know, it's a very senior-laden team. You know, a lot of those guys played as freshmen for us when I first got here as a coordinator. So when I took over, you know, we were able to have a 5-5 record, which hasn't been done around here since 1995. But, you know, we had guys defensively that we could get ourselves off the football field. And Spriggs was coming into his own, right? He was a sophomore quarterback. We had really good skill pieces around him. We had a Big Ten offensive coordinator calling plays. You know, so, I mean, it was a combination of a lot that went into that season. Fast forward to the 2017 season, and we lose some key pieces off the defense. But for the most part, we're back. We lose that coordinator, right? He ends up going on to another job, another Division I job. So we lose that coordinator. So then, you know, the recruiting slips just a little bit because now you're down to a couple guys. You know, you lose a full-time recruiter. So that's where you kind of start getting into, you know, some offensive linemen that are young. And then here's the other piece of it that a lot of people don't understand is sometimes kids retire, you know. Kids, for whatever reason, don't want to play football, and they retire. So, I mean, now, you know, I was sitting in here in my office the other day with one of our senior offensive linemen, and we were just kind of laughing and talking about some of the guys that kind of came through. And we said, man, wouldn't it be kind of cool if we had five senior offensive linemen or even a couple more juniors on offensive line so Spriggs could really spin that football. So, you know, when it comes down to, you know, turnover on your staff, you know, and kids retiring, you know, that's how you can get into this predicament, man. Well, you're pretty young. Now, granted, I love our 2018 recruiting class. I mean, we have a really good class. It's going to help us because they're playing a lot right now. So the future is bright for us. It's going to take our lumps. You know, it's going to got to take our lumps. And, you know, we got to – and I, as a head coach, your first-time head coach, you know, you learn those things. You know, you have to – always have an eye on recruiting, and that's got to be the main focus. You know, you kind of almost got to put the X's and O's away, where I was probably messing around with the X's and O's too much as a first year and second year head coach, where now it's everything is driven, recruit driven for me. You know, and I got to let my coaches coach, and I got to get good football players. So again, you go back to that 16 team, that 2016 team, we had some really good football players that played a lot of good plays, a lot of football for us, and we were able to get off the field. And we were able to make plays with the quarterback, and we had some older offensive linemen. So, I mean, I think about that all the time. You know, how did it go from the 5-5 till we haven't won a game yet? But can't get discouraged again. It's my first time doing it, and you live and you learn. You know, I always say, you know, you might fool me once. You ain't going to get me twice. So, you know, I figured it out and kind of shifted how my mindset needs to be. And you know, I'm excited to see how the future goes here. So, that's a great question. That's a fair question, Stu.
Stu would also like to know, based upon what you have seen the last two seasons, do you think maybe some changes are in need in the coaching staff or methods of recruiting or focus on recruiting or other similar areas?
Yeah, just kind of touched on it, man. That's got to be the main focus of my job now. Is, you know, it's got to be, you know, the X's and O's have got to be put down some. You know, it's really about developing relationships and cultivating a culture where our guys want to be here, which they do. And then obviously, you know, it's just all recruiting, I mean, from the 2019s to the 2020s and even getting an eye on the 2021 kids. So, you know, yeah, absolutely, man. That's a great question. That's a fair question. I'm glad you asked it, man, because it's been on my mind here the last couple of weeks as you're on a sideline and, you know, you lose to, you know, some of the teams that you feel like, you know, you're a little bit closer to. So it's a great question. So, yeah, we have an eye on it and we're addressing it.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of curious from your answers. Does this mean now, because you're really trying to drive into recruiting, that you have to depend on your assistant coaches to really run a lot more of the team's daily operations?
Not so much the daily operations. You know, I'm it's more so, you know, I'm rooted in the defense, right? So I was the defensive coordinator, and then when you take over to become the head coach, now you're doing both jobs, right? And you have to have an eye on recruiting. You just can't do all that. You can't coordinate a defense, run a program, and be good at, you're not going to be good at anything. So, you know, you got to put the hat, you know, I had to make a decision to put the X's and O's down, and recruiting and the day-to-day is what my, you know, is what my main job is. And more so just the recruiting piece. I mean, it's constantly on the phone with kids in the morning, late at night. I mean, it's amazing to me how this job has evolved in the last 3 years.
We next go to the very sad Andre, who says, Coach, our Eagles let us down this last week. Have Vikings fans been as insufferable to you as they have been to me?
Andre, I feel your pain, man. Again, the one thing I was very cautious of, man, Mike Zimmer is a really good football coach, man, right? So, you know, going out there and getting a win in South Philadelphia is really tough, but you got to tip your hats off to him. But, Dre, best thing that we got going for us is we got the Giants tonight up in New York, so that'll be a good one, NFC game. So, I mean, hopefully we can pull it out, you know, depending on how much recruiting calls, you know, I got to make tonight. And if I can get done early, hopefully I can catch the second half of that game, man. So we'll see.
On a positive note, Andre says, the East looks pretty weak this year outside of Boston. This should be a great year for the Sixers.
Yeah, you know what? But Boston and Toronto, minus those two teams, yeah, the Sixers hopefully can make some noise, and it'd be good for them to get into the two or even the one spot. But I mean, it is, you know, I think it'll be a little bit easier path with LeBron James out west, man, and, you know, hopefully Cleveland and Miami take a step backwards. So it'll be good. We're excited to watch the Sixers play this year.
Finally, I can read here. Shane says, is it better to wear gloves as a receiver or defensive back?
I think it's all preference. Yeah, I think that all has to do with preferences. You know, there's some guys back in the, I remember watching football back in, you know, the mid-80s, man. There was a guy for the Seattle Seahawks, man, Steve Largent. That dude didn't wear no gloves. I thought that was the coolest thing ever, man. So, you know, but then you have some guys that like to wear the gloves. I think that's more of a preference. So,
our next question comes from Kurt. He says, why are the friendships in football so much stronger than other sports? I don't get that.
Wow. Good question. Well, I could spend a long time talking about that one. I think it just has to do with the complexity of the sport, right? It's a sport that takes 11 guys to all do their jobs for a play to work, right? You have to, you know, the amount of time it goes into, one person can't take over a game, right? But and when you pull the layers back of a football game, you need football players one-on-one to win their individual battles, if that makes sense. So it's the ultimate team sport, but there's one-on-one battles that's involved in it. There's a lot of time and sweat that goes into it in the off season, right? You have 365 days in a year. You only have really 10 weeks, you know, to show what you've been doing. So those other 40 plus weeks, I mean, you're with the team. You guys are working out. You're eating together. I mean, you guys are playing video games together. If you're smart, you're studying together. You know, I mean, it's a lot of bonding that goes on. And those are, especially if you get a chance to do it at the college level. I mean, it's just, you know, I talk to my college roommates at least once a week about what's going on, you know, with our lives and all those things. So it's just a special sport that, you know, and the thing about it is, one of the best things about it is everybody can't play it. That's one of the special things. Everybody can't do it. And there's some people walking around on campus have no clue what it takes to be a college football player, right? And I don't care what level you're at, man. It is tough to play college football, man. It's a tough deal. So that's what makes it special. Once you graduate and you're one of the elite few that got a chance to get exposed and play college ball, man, that's a great feeling. Man, you walk into a room, you can look around and say, oh, I belong here, right? Yeah, I got the confidence. I belong here. I done did a lot more harder things than that person has. You know, for the most part, you never know what's really going on in somebody's life personally, too. But when you play college ball, it makes you in an elite group. So,
absolutely. Alex says, one of your players told me that something was sick recently. It took me a few minutes to realize that he was saying it was great. Do you understand all these terms that young men use these days?
It was sick. I don't know, man. These guys, sometimes I scratch my head, hear these guys talking on the sidelines or, you know, before meetings start, and I'm like, what did you just say? So I just have them kind of explain. So I try to stay connected through, and that's one of the great things about this sport. I've been doing it. I'm blessed to do it for 16 years. Right? So it keeps me young, you know, so it kind of keeps me, I guess if I was working a regular 9-to-5, I would not know what some of the terms mean. So I do enjoy being around our young guys. They can keep me in the loop, and then actually I can keep them in the loop too. I say, well, hey, this is how we used to do it. This is what we used to say. So it's good. It goes both ways.
AJ would like to know, what are your thoughts on what to do as a parent if your child is being bullied at school? When do you decide to step in? I know bullying can be hurtful, but I know it is also forces kids to stand up for themselves. So when is it time to step in?
Ooh, man, that's a double-edged sword there. I think it starts, you know, you have to start communicating with your son or daughter at an early age about, you know, learning to respect people, how to be treated, you know, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, you know, what should be done to you, what shouldn't be done to you. I mean, I think those are constant conversations you got to have with your kids. It just can't be, we're going to middle school, okay, and hopefully he doesn't get bullied. You know, I mean, I think you got to constantly be talking about that from the time that they start school, you know. And then one thing I always talk to my son about is, you know, and I remember what it was like in middle school, elementary. I mean, you know who the knuckleheads are, right? So I would always tell my son, listen, identify problems and stay away from them for the most part. Now, at some point, at the end of the day, you know, there's going to be a confrontation. You've got to protect yourself. But I would always just try to tell him, man, listen, you know who the knuckleheads are. Pay attention, right? Identify the problems, right? Meaning, who are the knuckleheads in the school? Stay away from them guys, man, and just kind of get into a good crowd, into a good circle. But at the end of the day, you know, if you have to defend yourself, try to keep me in the loop, let me know what's going on. And, you know, it's a touchy because, man, some of these kids these days, man, you know, the parents aren't around. So, I mean, or the parents are around and they want to, you know, wonder why the kids are bullying, because the parents are crazy too, man. Parents are knuckleheads. So it's just a slippery slope, man. You really got to just, you know, really got to pray that, you know, your son or daughter is in a good, safe environment and keep teachers alert and talk to your kids. And you got to, that's why sitting at the dinner table is critical with your kids, man. You know, you got to be able to sit and talk and have those conversations so you know what's going on, so it's not something that they're just keeping in and holding and hiding, man, because that is a real thing. Bullying is definitely real. So
that's great advice. Next up is Dan, who says, Coach, you are one of the most courteous people I know, so I have a question for you. Recently, a friend of mine introduced me to their friend. As we came up to their friend, he coughed in his hand and then offered to shake mine with the hand he just coughed in. I refused, and my friend said I was being rude. Was I really?
Were you rude? That's a good scenario. I don't want to say if you're rude or not, because I don't know body language, what the environment was, but I would give you my advice to you in the future is just ball your hand up in a fist and just give them a pound. Say, here you go, man. Just pound them out, you know, because I'm with you, man. Just give them a pound, man, because I'm very conscious of people coughing and sneezing and what they're doing with their hands, man. So I understand. So I don't want to say if you were rude or not, so I don't know.
Thomas would like to know, why doesn't Coach Taylor have a Twitter account?
Oh, Coach Taylor. Yeah, Twitter, I don't, that social media stuff is good and fine. I'm a little bit more private guy. I mean, there's just certain things that I just, you know, you just don't need to have out there, I guess, you know. You know, not to say that I don't. I might have one, and I might just be very incognito. You never know, you know. But just to say, you know, this is Coach Taylor's Twitter, and this is what's going on every day. Now, we have a Hamlin football Twitter, at Hamlin football, that you can definitely follow, but you know, just for me to have a Twitter and just be out there, or the Facebook and the Instagram, all the social media stuff that our players do, just that's not my era. I mean, I grew up in a time where if I saw a camera, I was probably trying to run away from it, right? Not jump in front of it and show the whole world, right? That's not the era we grew up in. Man. We was very private people, and I'm glad the way that we grew up, and it was very, you know, we have those memories just for us. Right, we got to go take a camera to a Walgreens and film developed. Right, nobody does that anymore. Like, those are the good days. If you really wanted to see some pictures, there's a process. Now you just pull a phone out, you take a picture, and the whole world sees it. Now I'm not interested in that. No pictures.
Thomas would also like to know, give us the perfect hashtag to describe Coach Taylor.
I'd probably say, And I'm not 100% sure exactly what the hashtag does. I always hear people talking about hashtag this, hashtag that. But if to describe myself, I'd probably say, again, something I use with my son, it's on his room door, I talk about AIE, and it's just attitude is everything. So maybe I'd probably do that. I'm a big believer, like I talk to him every day. I always try to tell him, and again, it was a college coach who taught us this. He said, before both feet hit the ground in the morning, we already decided what kind of day it's going to be, right? You control your attitude. So probably take care of the hashtag, maybe attitude is everything, AIE. So.
Awesome. And why is it good to be a Piper?
It's good to be a Piper. Oh, man, it's always awesome to be a Piper, man. This is the land of opportunity. We're playing a lot of young people. They're doing a great job in the classroom. We have another MIAC football opponent, a worthy, really great MIAC football opponent coming up for homecoming. So there's a lot of good reasons to be a Piper today. So excited about that.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us this week, Coach.
All right. Catch you next week.
We want to thank Coach Taylor for joining us on TaylorMade. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Hamlin coach, please send them to us at ChipTaylor@minorleaguesportsreport.com. That's ChipTaylor@minorleaguesportsreport.com. Please have your questions to us by Tuesday evening so we can give the coach a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pinier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on TaylorMade.